And welcome to the Bill Bennett Show, thoughtful conversation about the news of the day and address the existential threats to America, and they are real indeed. Joining us today, and I say us, Claude Jennings is with me. Claude, good morning.
Good morning to you, and hello to everybody listening, however they're listening. Yeah,
however they're listening, and whether you were drafted in the NFL or not, we'll have more about that. Today, Brian Kennedy and Joel Farkas join us. Brian Kennedy is the president of the American Strategy Group. He's also the chairman of the Committee on the Present Danger, China. Joel Farkas is the director of the American Strategy Group. I'm a fellow of the American Strategy Group here in Washington. Claude, how are you this morning?
I'm doing wonderful this morning. At the time that we're recording, it's Friday. Round one of the NFL draft was yesterday. I'm getting ready for round two and three and trying to breathe a little bit. I mean, the world is going crazy. And by the way, we did post earlier this week audio from your TV appearance on Fox News on America's Newsroom, talking about these protests going on college campuses. And this morning, actually, I got news that there's a protest happening here in D.C. on GW's campus. So, yeah, it's all over the place, man.
Yeah, they're everywhere. It's everywhere. But let's take a moment of sanity and comfort and talk about the NFL draft.
Yes.
I'd like you to take a look at selection number one and selection number 11.
Okay, for sure. Let's see. Selection number one, obviously, was Caleb Williams, quarterback, USC, Gonzaga grad.
Right. Number 11.
Oh, Penn State offensive lineman, they call him Olu Fashanu, but his name is like Olu Muwiwa.
Yeah, and what about him? Also Gonzaga College.
Well?
Yes, yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
I think I maybe missed the wrong calling in life.
Right.
Maybe God had touched me at Gonzaga to be an offensive lineman. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Instead of a very offensive commentator. I don't
right. know. Push people around with your hands and not with your words.
In any case, that's it's an interesting thing. But I just thought I'd point that out for the audio.
You're listening to The Bill Bennett Show. Bill Bennett Show.
Let's welcome Brian Kennedy and Joel Farkas to the show. Well, let's start locally at home. We can start either in the courtroom of this ridiculous trial, with David Pecker testifying and people going minute by minute on David Pecker when it really means nothing, best I can tell. Or these demonstrations on campus. Which way do we want to go, Joel?
Well, either way, it's headed to an
go
abyss.
Okay.
It's an abyss for our universities, for our educational system. We're only witnessing what many people have known for 20, 30, 40 years, including you, Bill. Started this discussion four decades ago or more. We're just seeing it. We're witnessing it. There's a complete disintegration of a public education system in America and the university system. At this point, there's almost no reason for our children to go to one of these institutions. And yet, kids from all over the world, they don't have any better opportunity. They still look at the U.S. education system as the only place where their kids can go and get an education for their future, which suggests to me that this is just the worst it could possibly be.
Well, people say in response, what's going on in these campuses, as bad as it is it's a sliver of a student body. In fact, many, or if not most, of the people in these demonstrations may not even be students, and that most of the real student body wants to go and do their classes and do their work.
No? Yeah, you know, I want Brian to comment that, but I don't disagree with that. When I talk about the education system, I'm not talking about the vast majority of good kids, good people, good citizens, good humans. I'm talking about who runs it, the tyranny, the Department of Education that you led, the tax-exempt status, the endowments, the co-opting of the entire public education system and university system by foreign governments, sovereign wealth funds. That's what I'm speaking about.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we're seeing the kids they're not safe there. They don't even want to be there anymore. They can't be there. They wanted to, they can't be there. We have seen, whether it's the Department of Education, where we've seen the teachers' unions, where we've seen any institution, whether it's public or private, they are run by people that small majority, they're run by the small majority of despots.
Okay. Brian, you want to comment?
Yeah, no, I think that's very well said. I think the, as always, it's the small, well-organized minority that is able to outflank and really dominate the apathetic majority. And on the college campuses, you see that today. But there's two things to be said about that. One is you can't really teach people for a half century that America is a bad place and that its institutions are evil and immoral and that the fundamental basis of our society is evil, which is what we've been doing in our universities. Hence your response, Bill, in your books, you know, among them, America, the Last Best Hope. You wrote that book in part because you were seeing the exact opposite almost everywhere in academia and in the, you know, history scholarship that was being produced, that somewhere within all that scholarship was this undertone that because America was founded on, among other things, Western Judeo-Christian civilization, because it was founded on that, it was fundamentally flawed. And evidence of this was slavery and capitalism had its injustices, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We've taught the best and brightest, now the people teaching in the universities, that this was the case for how many years now? And they taught it to their students and they taught it to their students. And now these people are the ones running the university so that deep in their hearts, they know, or they believe, at least, I mean, they know for themselves, but they believe for themselves that Western civilization is bad, that the foundation of their university is bad. And so when they see these protesters out there on the streets, they have more sympathy for the protesters, for the students who want to go to class and learn. And that, that really is the crisis we're in today.
And Bill, what you have said and what Brian has just said, many people know. The seminal issue is, what do people who know that do? And Brian mentioned apathy. There's some, it's not just apathetic students, or it's people that are also capable and empowered and have resources who do nothing also. They don't do anything. They allow it. We now see some of the, you know, the wealthiest people in the United States saying, I'm not going to fund XYZ University. Okay, this XYZ University didn't just begin behaving this way. It's been for decades. Where were they when they saw this crisis? They're not even apathetic. They were encouraging this behavior. And now they've just realized, as Scooby-Doo might say, ruh-roh.
Yeah, well, isn't it also the case that they thought that this left-wing extremism was kind of a intellectual foible that is just something that, you know, this handful of people believe in and it's really no big deal. They don't see that it can take political power and that there's action behind it. And, you know, this active, you know, anti-Semitism around the country is the obvious manifestation of that, because you go from left-wing ideology straight to anti-Semitism, Jew hatred of the worst sort, and violence against Jews. It's a pretty quick, pretty quick step there. And that's that shot the Robert Kraft and William Ackman and some of these other folks. But it was obvious, and it was as clear as the nose on your face. And you look at Michigan, for instance, today. You know, in Michigan, you have these groups of Muslims getting up on campuses talking about death to Israel and death to America.
Okay.
And they bring left-wing radicals, and that stuff is very real and very dangerous.
I want to comment a little bit on what you guys have said. But first, can we disaggregate a little bit the crowds, the people who are gathering in protest? By the way, I was reviewing my alma maters, all of them, and they're all having major protests. I'm feeling very responsible. Harvard, University of Texas, Williams College. Anyway,
it's not your fault. It's not.
Are you sure? Okay. You sure? Okay.
I absolve you, Bill.
University of Texas did seem to me to respond correctly, and the president said no, and it was a massive show of force. Did you guys notice that by any chance?
Yes, sure.
Okay. That was good. But to the point about the Ackmans and the Krafts, you know, withdrawing their funds, and, you know, where were they earlier? A point I'd make is, you know, if you give $1 million or $2 million, that only requires 30 or 40 parents writing checks for tuition to make that up. I mean, the problem here may be with some of these very wealthy guys who have been a source of subvention of these activities. But conversation I had not long ago with a mom who said, a working mom, very successful mom, who talked about the fact that her kids were being indoctrinated at a second or third rate college that was still very expensive. And she said, but what can I do? I said, don't write the check. And she said, well, that's impossible. I hate to spread this problem even more broadly to the American people, but there's been this belief about higher education that no matter what, pay for it, get more members of the family to go to work, to chip in. If grandma has to work or Uncle Joe, put them to work. Just your comments. But I do want us before too long to disaggregate these crowds. Who's there at Columbia?
You're right. There is a difference. There's the donations, contributions, which is really intended for some sort of legacy of these very wealthy people. That's this notion, this legacy, and they can get recognition, and they feel that they're promoting and supporting education, and they feel because they wrote such a big check, also they can control, as Brian alluded to, the small, seemingly fringe minority. They feel they can control them. They're not that big of a deal. Well, they've learned they cannot, and they are a big deal because they act. The people you're talking about, Bill, that's absolutely correct. I alluded to kids from other countries who feel that their families feel the only place that's still the best place in the world is send their kids to the United States, get a higher education, college. That is the best option they have anywhere in the world, regardless of what we're witnessing. And that is true. They believe that, and which means they do write checks for $50,000, $70,000, $100,000 a year, and then get student debt to subsidize tax-exempt organizations that have, Harvard has $85 billion of endowment. The top 30 universities have $500 billion of endowment. You're exactly right. The perception, the belief, that's the only solution, that's the only option, that's pervasive. But the answer to the mother that asked you, what do I do? Your answer was right on, right, perfectly on point. Don't do it. I've heard you give speeches before, Bill, many times. Years ago, you probably forgot. Invariably, when the Q&A comes up, someone says, Mr. Bennett, this is spectacular. It's wonderful what you say. But there's nothing I can do, generally. And you would instantly respond, yes, there is. It didn't matter the topic.
Yeah.
You have that instinct, Bill. You've always had it. I've seen it since I've known you. Brian knows that there's a lot of people who are apathetic. The answer is, yes, you can do something and do it today.
Yeah, well I thank you. At the same time, I have to tell you, I wrote those checks.
I did too. I wrote them to USC and NYU. How do you think I feel today?
All right, well, I wrote them to Princeton. Now, I will say that I think my boys were pretty much immune from this because they were very tough and tough-skinned, and they were kind of idea warriors when they went to college. But go ahead, Brian, you were going to say something.
No, I mean, I think it's partly, a question of, are you writing the checks to the parents, but what are you having your kids study in college?
Yeah.
Is I think the real crisis where we're in today. I think a lot of America is broken. I think that our elite institutions, but even our normal everyday institutions, are breaking down for lack of competency. Say what you mean. When doors are flying off airplanes, something is wrong, mm-hmm. right? And so,
sure.
When computers don't work, when cars don't work. I've had a very nice car in the shop for 6 weeks because they can't figure out how to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
These are these are things in America that used to work that now they don't work. We send our kids to school to study sociology and, women's studies and intergender studies and all sorts of bullshit that no sensible human being should be wasting a moment studying. And we have, if you were sending your kids to school and writing big checks so that they could study engineering and medicine and science and the things that might be useful in a free society, that would be one thing. When you're writing the big checks for them to study the worst kind of poetry, you know, and transgenderism and other radical ideologies, that's just insane. Say what you will about all those, you know, kids from other countries that come here. Most of them are studying engineering and science to go back to their own country and make their country's great. Whereas,
yeah, the Chinese kids don't come in to do black studies for sure. Yeah,
right, right. And so
we're gender studies.
You're right, Brian. I mean, just, a lot of them go to places like Georgia Tech. Things like that.
But guys, I last time I looked, I think the largest major in American colleges and universities was business. So
I can comment on that. I was a double major, business and economics.
Okay.
One of the more worthless majors I think I could have chosen. I've been in business now for more than 40 years. Almost nothing. The only thing I remember and learned from my major at UCLA was so many things that business people and economists do that have no relevance.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's kind of the only thing I learned.
But it wasn't corrupting, was it?
That was 4 years ago.
But it wasn't corrupting, was it?
Well, if you believe, I mean, yes, it is. Because now, maybe not corrupting in a manner that we're witnessing right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if you believe that these answers to business or economic issues are correct, and you have to, because the chairman of the Fed is an economist, the chairman of the European Union, World Economic Forum. Who do we listen to? Economists, so-and-so, Nobel Prize winning, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, okay.
Said whatever. They said interest rates. They said monetary policy, fiscal policy. This is meaningless stuff. What they describe is not only, it's not corrupting, it's just patently inaccurate.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me say one thing, I'm not obtuse about it. We had the chairman of the Fed 2 years ago testify in front of Congress, telling in a congressional hearing, there is no inflation. Whatever inflation you see is transitory. And he went off to describe the distinction and differences of what core inflation is versus transitory or sticky inflation is. For goodness sake, does anyone 2 years and 2 years later, we've witnessed that's absolutely inaccurate. And we still have economists saying, you know, we were still kind of right when it's so patently clear they are wrong. And there is no one in the world, let alone the United States, that believes their food costs, housing costs, energy costs, transportation costs are lower. They are astronomically higher than they were, and they haven't gone down. And yet we have economists trying to describe what they see is wrong, what they feel is wrong, what the experience is wrong, and why the economists still are right. I don't know if that's corrupting. I don't know if that's the right word, but it's really, really dumb.
It may not be corrupting, but it's corrupt. Look, we're living under the age, Joel, of modern monetary theory, as you well know, and it's what you're describing. These university-trained economists have come up with this idea that the world can run deficits into infinity, and that would be a good thing and perfectly acceptable, and economies will just absorb all this debt. And what we're finding is that's not the case. And the practical application of that in America has been this inflation we've been living under. That's on the one hand. And so the academic trend is extremely corrupt and not very effective, just in the very thing it's trying to do. The other thing I would say, Bill, is we think today in business bureaucratically. And so the business schools have created a generation of bureaucrats that operate in major corporations. The experience Joel has is that the big successful businesses, or the businesses that are successful in America of any size, have really ingenious entrepreneurs who work really hard and figure things out. And most of it was not the academic training they got in university, but just their own common sense and their own creativity and their own hard work. That's the thing that makes America work today, not that we've had a generation of people studying business in school.
And to put a complete metric to what Brian just said, largest employers, current employers, are big business in the United States. The largest contributors to employment growth, new employment, are small and mid-sized businesses.
Yeah.
So you have this idea that big business is the grandest employer. No, they have a lot of employees, but guess what they do? For efficiency, over time, they lay them off. Employment growth does not come from large businesses. It comes from entrepreneurs, small and mid-sized businesses. So if you want to have a future, you're not going to have the bureaucracies of large companies be the grand poobahs of economics.
Okay. Points well established. Let's go back to these demonstrations. Who's in this crowd? Disaggregate. Tell me who's in there.
My guess is a third of them are left-wing students and students who are themselves mostly Muslims or communists. Two-thirds of the crowd are either volunteer communist agitators or paid communist agitators, because they don't look, you know, you see them interviewed on TV, some of them, and they don't appear to be very enthused about any of this. The reports that I get from folks out in the field are that the American left is having a hard time animating anybody to the cause of Joe Biden. And so they need something else. And that something else is this war in Gaza. And you could see in pamphlets that they hand out at these universities that they're very particular about animating folks around the whole Palestinian cause. They had one, at the University of Michigan, where they talked about, you know, the Islamic cause, the anarchist cause, the communist cause. And in this one document, it talked about freedom for Palestine means death to America. And so you can see what they were trying to unite there, those two groups, the radical Islamic world that hates America and wants to destroy it, and also the, you know, Palestinian particular group, or the communists that could be united with the Palestinian group when they talk about freedom for Palestine. But it encompasses everything, doesn't it? Freedom for Palestine means death to America. So you can see who they're trying to get going there.
Yeah.
It also seems that they're paying a lot of folks to do this. And there's a lot of walking around money that the George Soros types can spread into this. And the communist Chinese, let me add, because the communist Chinese were sponsoring this kind of radicalism in 2020. And I expect they're sponsoring it again today. And you see evidence of this, at least in California, by that kind of money coming around.
Is this insurrection? You know, I'm thinking of January 6th and the heavy study and probing of that crowd and who was in that crowd. What was that crowd up to? This is, you know, the crowd that, you know, descended on the Capitol. Is there something similar, some similar inquiry going on about these crowds? Should there be? Good. Thank you. I was waiting for that. All right, go ahead.
No, look, we're more likely to be investigated for this conversation we're having today.
Uh-huh.
Than any of the violence going on in American college campuses.
That's interesting. Boy, that is interesting. And that is discouraging. And that is depressing. Go ahead, Joel. You laughed.
That's my answer. And okay. Brian's follow-up is perfect.
Okay.
They're too busy. Look, unfortunately, the American justice system and the FBI under this radical regime we're living under is more interested in investigating mothers who are complaining about pornography and transgenderism in schools. The FBI would rather investigate those moms than these radicals on American college campuses and in American cities.
Before we wait for you to ask at the end, is there any source of optimism? I want to just chime in right now.
Early optimism, I like it.
Always, always. Our people who believe what we believe, admire what we admire, freedom and liberty, our best advocate is the insanity of those who disagree with us. We now have a world that is starting to look at and see and witness insanity.
Oh, yeah, and you think people see it as such? Are you confident people see it as such?
Oh, I think I'm confident people see it as such. Where I stop to get away from my optimism is, what is anyone going to do about it?
Yeah,
people can see it. People can be aware of it. They can read it. You know, every philosopher in known human civilization has described there's a difference between information and knowledge.
Yeah,
it's Einstein who said, you know, knowledge doesn't mean anything else. I can't remember exactly what he said, but smarter people than me know what he said. You have to do something with this information. You have to do something with your knowledge. And that's the issue.
Can I disagree?
Sure.
Not about that particular point, but about your optimism.
Good.
God forbid. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have to, early optimism has to be met with early and,
Okay.
I think a lot of a lot of the Islamic world, they know in certain polite society in America, you cannot be overtly anti-Semitic. Now they feel morally obliged to be anti-Semitic. When you have large crowds in America chanting from the river to the sea, you're talking about the annihilation of the Jewish people. When you see that on college campuses of the students that are trying to make it into the class, or professors trying to make it into class and then being blocked from getting there, I think you're a heartbeat away from the kind of violence that would be extremely destructive of a free society like ours. And I think you have this marriage of communism and Islam, the so-called red-green axis, as other writers have described, and put together, they can't destroy America because we are too resilient for that. But it can cause a lot of damage and a lot of heartbreak, and it can ruin the experience these kids have in college. It can cause violence. And, you had Jewish activist here in Southern California get murdered by a group of Muslims who were just standing there, saw the Israeli, I think it was a guy who was a doctor, and they just whacked him over the head and killed him. And so I do think there is something more serious going on here. And I think this summer we could see massive violent demonstrations by this illusion that there is popularity with these communists and Muslims and this, war in Gaza. They create the illusion or the narrative that this is a popular front, right? That people are genuinely concerned. I don't think Americans are genuine. I don't think people give a rat's ass, forgive my language, about what's really going on when it comes to Israel's response to the attack on October 7th. I think most Americans think, that's a perfectly reasonable thing to do. No one thinks it's genocide. And yet the narrative in the media, and these things are worth focusing on at some level. The media narrative is that there is genocide going on in Gaza. And let me say, there is not genocide going on in Gaza. And yet on every major left-wing news channel, that is what's being propagated.
Did you guys notice the U.S. is building some kind of pier off the coast there on Gaza? You know about this? To supply and to put care packages and food and so on. You know about that, right? The U.S. I read that it was fired upon by Hamas. They fired upon it. So, there you go. Go ahead.
Bill, I tried for a modicum of optimism. I do agree with everything Brian said. I am extraordinarily despondent and every dis word I could come up with. There's nothing about how Brian described where we are today that I disagree.
Well, there's a lot of trouble for the Democrats because they're going to go to the, you talk about summer, another summer of 1968. That's what's been predicted for the Democrat convention. But let me just move on from that. Apart from that trouble, here is Donald Trump. And is that not a cause for optimism? Now, you guys know where I am on this. I am very worried, and I don't understand why it is so close right now. In the polls, even slightly edging toward Biden. I'm killing my own optimism here. Tell me why this is or is not some cause of optimism for you all.
Well, I don't know that it's optimism. I always try to be realistic about these things. I think just objectively, if you look at an aggregation of the polls, it does seem close. When you look at individual polls, some individual polls show Trump far ahead.
What do you mean individual? What do you mean by an individual?
Well, you have the, you know, look, I'm not even sure we can trust polls today, frankly, right? So there are some polls coming out of some universities that have it close. There are other private pollsters that don't have it close, that Trump is that has Trump ahead by a lot.
Okay.
Now, that having been said, we've done nothing. The reason I'm pessimistic is we've done nothing when it comes to election integrity.
That's right.
We've done some things in you know, Republican states where you have pretty fair elections to begin with. But in the seven swing states, we've not fixed that. And we're not going to fix that in time. And the apparatus for running the election in those places is still in the hands of pretty radical Democrats who are not going to conduct free and fair elections.
There's not a country in the world that thinks it's a good idea that people can sign a ballot, sign their name, send it in. Yeah. They don't have to show up. They don't have to have an ID.
Yeah, no kidding. No,
there's not. We are the only country in the world that thinks that is a great way to elect public officials.
But yes, right. I agree. I think I've told you, and I think we've been on air where I talked about, you know, voting in North Carolina. You know, going and saying, I'm William Bennett. They said, okay, here's your ballot. I said, you want my ID? No, it's fine.
I can't check into a hotel room without my ID.
I know. All right. But Brian.
Sometimes I jokingly say, why do I need to show my ID? And they look at me like, what are you talking about? To me, it's funny.
Of course. But Brian, you talked about swing states, but every time I see a profile of swing states, Trump's leading. Now, that's polls, and you may not trust them. And I'm with you. I'm polls aside. I'm worried about, you know, could we have a fair election? I think if we did have a fair election, I think Trump has a very, very good chance of winning it. But I'm worried about that. Maybe we don't. Why do these polls in the swing state seem to be so positive for Donald Trump?
Because, well, one, let's just state the obvious. His policies worked during his presidency.
Quality
of people's lives went up radically.
For sure.
Yeah. And now they are going down, and people don't like that. Hence his popularity. I don't doubt for a moment his popularity. My doubt is entirely about whether or not we can have a free and fair election. Donald Trump is more popular than he has ever been. You look at that trial in New York and all those trials around the country.
Yeah.
And you look at that and you think the Democrats have lost their minds, that they have abandoned the rule of law, that they are doing the kind of things that the Soviets would do. In show trials,
what
they're doing to Donald Trump. It is among the most shameful things politically in this nation's history. And God bless Donald Trump and his courage for standing up to these people and going for it and, you know, getting out there in public and making a defense for himself where, you know, where no one else will. Did you see the other day? So he leaves the courtroom in the bodega in New York. And the people are lined up 7 or 8 people deep just to cheer him on in New York City.
Yeah.
Goes into the bodega, meets with the Bodega Association and meets with the guys who are running that and the guy who had been robbed. And, you know, he cares about the community. People feel it. They love him for that. That's Donald Trump. The American people see a man who has only one angle he's trying to play, and that is, can we save our country?
Yeah. And George Soros has funded the idea that you don't have to change the laws. You just have to elect those who refuse to enforce certain laws or selectively enforce laws. He's been doing this for several decades. He's very good at it. Why does he support secretaries of states? You know, low dollar elections, district attorneys, you go down the line, state senators, you know, state representatives. You don't need Washington to change laws. You simply need to not enforce or selectively enforce laws. And instinctively, the American people know that's absurd. But more importantly, people around the world who've lived in tyranny, they've lived it. They know what it looks like for a corrupt judicial system. They know what it's like.
Yeah. Yet a large swath of the American people thinks that he's maybe or probably guilty on several of these charges in several of these states.
Of what?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
of what?
Whatever guilty he's charged with. You know,
We used to, I don't know which part of the Constitution said you are innocent until proven guilty. But there was, you know, I used to be taught that in civics, innocent until proven guilty. I can assure you there's not a school in the United States that teaches that to kids today.
There are a few. Yeah, there are a few classical academies.
Maybe
schools of choice.
Maybe
a few schools of choice. You mean colleges and universities? No, there are a few of those. Some other Catholic institutions that have remained Catholic. It's certainly not a majority position on universities.
These are made up crimes. Look, these are made up crimes. People see them as political in nature.
I think you're right that many people do, but I don't think most people do.
I think most people do. He wouldn't be this popular in the polls.
You want to know the
wait a minute. But why do the polls go 44-44, 46-46?
Why do I talk
to dozens of people who voted for Trump, who, you know, or would be inclined to vote for Trump, who keep telling me, oh, I just can't vote for that guy?
Because you're talking to children, Bill. You're talking to children. We have infantilized. Look, you live in among the most sophisticated cities in the country.
In D.C. and in North Carolina. Well, remember, right. Southport is not.
And it's filled with adults who are children who cannot see what they see with their own two eyes, which is that this country is falling apart. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to converse with anybody who votes for Joe Biden in this coming election, because that it will mean that they are so out of touch with reality as to be beyond normal conversation. The idea that you're not going to vote for Donald Trump because he tweets or he, you know, says what he says, you know, did he stand up for the country? Yes. Did we have peace and prosperity? Yes. Did we have war in the Middle East? No. Did we have war in Europe? No. Did we have a rebuilding of America during Donald Trump? Yes. I mean, the idea that would prefer the decline we're living under to Donald Trump.
I agree with you. It's hard to believe.
I don't believe economic forecasts. I don't believe polls. My entire business endeavor is data and me going out and physically talking to, speaking to, and witnessing what people do. I do not listen to a market research report ever, because they're wrong. They're meaningless. They're generic. The people that know about the corruption of a judicial system or who is in charge with economics are the same people who try to build an outbuilding on their property and are met with $25,000 to $50,000 of fees from a jurisdiction who has really no right to impose it. For a regulation that doesn't allow you to use, we don't have private property rights in many states anymore. They don't allow you to do anything without some sort of environmental impact study that causes you to get almost federal or congressional approval for something you're trying to do. People who get charged with seemingly meaningless crimes, like Brian alluded to earlier, they want to assert their right to what their kids are taught in school, that all of a sudden the local school board decides to go after them. This is what people see. Real people, not the 20 major urban areas of this country or the media. This is what real people see. They know it's insanely corrupt.
All right. So why aren't you two then more optimistic?
let me give it to you I am an American and I am proud, and I'm the luckiest person in the history of all generations to live in this country at this time. There's never been in the history of known civilization to have this great fortune. But to maintain this great fortune, you have to be vigilant, because it's going to be attacked. And it is attacked. You know, most countries, why am I not optimistic? I'm not sure optimism is the right word. I think it's, to describe what Brian said, realistic. You know, most in countries and most religious faiths celebrate something that is the arrival of a place. You've pursued, you've tried, and here you came, and that's a celebration. We just had Passover. Passover is the celebration of the exodus, the leaving of Egypt, not the arrival anywhere. It's leaving something.
Yeah.
The idea behind that is there's a constant pursuit that you never actually get there, but you pursue it and you believe it. And to defend liberty and democracy, freedom, it is not something that you attain and achieve and, okay, I'm done with it. It is constant vigilance.
Yep. I agree.
That's very well said, Joel.
I guess you're off the hook, Brian, a little bit, because you've maintained throughout that you have doubts about the fairness of the election process.
Yeah, but also here's the reason. The other reason I'm discouraged. I mean, I'm optimistic because I still think two-thirds of the country is on our side, frankly. So I don't see a 50-50 country. I don't see it anywhere I go.
Okay.
What discourages me are the Republicans in Congress, in both the House and the Senate. They seem to me like mostly cowards. Where are they in standing up for President Trump and this, what looks to me like, and others, like a criminal conspiracy to silence the presidential candidate of the Republicans?
Yeah.
It's like a criminal conspiracy. Where are the Republicans in Congress standing up to that? Where are the Republicans standing up to defend our border? They're too busy giving money to Ukraine, it appears, to stand up for anything that might really make a difference in this country.
They've been pretty good on the border stuff, haven't they?
No.
Look,
they have a political... Look, Republicans have a majority in the House. Why aren't they leveraging that to force Joe Biden to close the borders?
We've done nothing.
We've let in 13 million people to 15 million people over the last 3 years.
The Republicans in Congress have done nothing.
I agree with you in that,
they say, they chat, they discuss, they pander. They've done nothing.
No, they wasted time, certainly, with this impeachment of, Mayorkas. I mean, ridiculous.
Hey, hold on. What was ridiculous? Impeaching him or not actually pushing it quicker, hard enough, fast enough?
Well, I mean,
they should have done it the second day. They should have done this last year.
But both, I mean, because there was not a chance of conviction. It's a waste of time, isn't it?
Total waste of time.
Tell me why.
Make the case to the American people. Make the case for the fact that these open borders are killing the United States.
Yeah.
Mayorkas is the one facilitating that at the behest of Joe Biden.
Right.
And the Republicans, including two friends of mine, personal friends of mine of a sort, certainly Tom McClintock, but also Mike Gallagher. I don't know Mike that well, but I like him. And both people, congressmen, otherwise sensible, voted against impeaching Mayorkas for the dumbest of reasons, that they said that they find these twisted ways of thinking about things. They said, well, this was not, impeaching him doesn't make any sense because it's, the Congress should not be looking at maladministration, which is, really what Mayorkas is doing. And either we have the rule of law or we don't. We have a constitution, it is said, and there are laws in that, that the constitution is meant to be used to enforce. And we have all sorts of laws on the books that no one seems to care about, as Joel alluded to. If Mayorkas in the Biden administration is going to have zero interest in those laws and simply open the border, give money to people to come into the country and to encourage them to engage in political radicalism of the kind they're engaged in to destroy the country, the idea that the people involved in that should not be impeached, why is there an impeachment provision if we're not going to use it?
I know many staunch, avid Democrats who support the Biden administration and Democrat causes, who say, yeah, what's going on is terrible, but this is an election year. You don't understand how this works, Joel. And these are the same people who said they could control and contain some of this nonsense going on for the last 20, 30 years.
What do they mean it's an election year? You don't understand, Joe. What do they mean?
Pandering to all these disparate groups that are doing really bad things and supporting really bad things, which we've already talked about, people already know about. But my point is really those who have authority and power, not even elected officials, the lobbyists who raise funds for, who support, and who are very influential that no one's ever heard of, they believe still, with all the failure that has gone on, they still believe that their ideology is correct. Their method is correct. The idea that any of them would possibly look at themselves and say, have a little bit of awareness and humility, I might have been wrong. Maybe I should try something different. That's never going to happen in my lifetime or, quite frankly, in any generation. So the dismay that Brian is talking about is there's a whole bunch of people that aren't going to do anything. They're not only not going to do anything, they're going to keep doing what they've done, which means Brian said it perfectly. Make the case to the American people. Make it. If you're going to sit there and do it behind the scenes or within the construct of whatever administration is doing their administering, it's going to fail and we're going to crumble. But make the case.
There's no one making the case.
No, Bill, come on, look. They could shut down the country today if they wanted to, the Republicans in Congress, if they were really interested in doing that. What the Biden administration is doing is criminal. From what they're doing to Trump, to the open borders, to what they're doing in Ukraine. Not to jump around here, but first of all, when did we ever think it was okay to use the Justice Department this way? The number three guy from the Justice Department, Colangelo, goes down from D.C. D.C. to New York just to run this whole thing. Since when is that a proper use of the Justice Department? Never. Let in 13 million people across the border and paid for them to do so. We give them money as they cross the border and house them in American cities. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me?
To jump around a little bit, in Israel and Gaza on October 7th, just recently, the head of Israel's security resigned. And why? Because he failed. He failed to understand the looming threat. The SEAL teams, IDF forces, as soon as this happened, their phones were blowing up. They all got their firearms and they started heading south to the area under attack. On their way down, they had Waze, the app to show you where to go, and directed them off the main roads to other areas. Why? Because those main roads were manned with groups to ambush anyone coming down to defend this area. This was a well-organized attack. It was an attack well-organized by people with guns. It was an attack that way where they were followed with civilians from Gaza to the area. And the head of security in Israel failed to understand that this thing was looming. It didn't just happen. It wasn't happenstance. What that means is he was held accountable, or he held himself accountable. I don't know of a darn person in this country that's going to hold themselves accountable for their failure.
And by the way, just politically too, let's look at this. It was Joe Biden who really is ultimately the source of the funding of what transpired in Gaza. The Biden administration comes in, they start giving money to Gaza. They give money to the Iranians, the Biden administration, millions and millions of dollars that the Iranians then funnel straight into Hamas in order to do what? To destroy Israel and ultimately to destroy America.
Columbia University is a little more overt. They have actually a cooperative satellite campus in Qatar, in Doha, Qatar. So they're not even surreptitious about it.
Oh, boy. All right, gentlemen, we got to wrap it up. Concluding thoughts? Not optimistic about November?
I had lunch yesterday with Sean Thompson, who's one of the most famous world surfing champions from South Africa, United States. He lives in Santa Barbara. Sean just got back from Israel, and he was doing a memorial service for 26 SEAL team members. It's 26 members of that were killed on October 7th. They were surfers, and he's one of the most foremost spokesman of the surfing community worldwide. And he described the SEAL team members and other people, just regular people, and the moving, beautiful surfing memorial where they paddled out, did what a surfer does. They splashed, kind of sent off their fellow brethren, recited prayers, the Shema prayer, which is "Hear, O Israel," which is "Hear us." And then he reported that right now, people are still in restaurants and bars. They're out. They're living their lives. They will defend themselves and they will live their lives without concern that they're not going to be cowed to decimated. It is a struggle. It's a lifelong struggle. It will never end. And the optimism is that people, not institutions that we've been talking about, people, as Brian said, 2/3 of the people in this country are on our side. The only optimism I have is that they continue what they're doing, and whatever we can do to help encourage their voice is the best we can do.
Very good. Very good. Brian?
Yeah, I that was excellent. I like that. I think as pessimistic as I can be about whether there's going to be a free and fair election, I do think the choice will be just so clear to the American people that they could come out in numbers that could overwhelm the amount of cheating that could go on. That is my sincere hope.
That
there is such clarity and that the choice is so clear that, you know, there'll be no doubt about the election. It would be my hope that Americans can see that you just can't have this kind of an election where people have mail-in balloting at this level and expect to have a country where people have faith in the system. That is part of our problem here. We need to have clarity about the choice, and we need to have clarity that the process itself was free and fair, so that whoever becomes president on January 20th of next year, and I think it will be Donald Trump, but it is so clear that the system was fair that he'll have, you know, he or Biden will have legitimacy in what it is that they're going to do to govern this country. That's something we have not had these past 4 years. And it's because in 2020, the system was not fair. It did not look fair, and it wasn't fair. And that has led to the 4 years of real heartache for many, many Americans, and the global crisis we're in today. And so getting that right in November is among the highest priority things. It's the main thing. A fair,
yes, sir.
In a democratic republic like ours, having a fair election is the main thing.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Joel.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, gentlemen, very much. Appreciate both of you more than you know. Thank you.
You're listening to The Bill Bennett Show.
Well, Claude, that does it for today's show. To catch up on previous episodes of this show, go to The Bill Bennett Show, or other episodes of the show, go to thebillbennettshow.com. You can follow me on X, formerly Twitter, at William J. Bennett, and like me on Facebook. Just search Bill Bennett. Feel free to email the show. I'd love to hear from you. It's Bill Bennett Podcast at gmail.com. Please share the podcast with your family and friends. We'll catch up next week.